Welcome to Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. My name is Rick Campos, and this podcast is my response to a design community eager to support, share, and inspire one another. We all know that some things simply cannot be taught in a classroom. I believe that our number one resource for information and inspiration is our peers. Join me as I sit down with industry professionals from across the country to discuss their secret to survival in the business of design. Today, we welcome Joshua Smith to the podcast, owner and principal designer of Joshua Smith, Inc., a Vermont-based design firm specializing in full-service residential interior design with an emphasis on bringing greater joy and meaning to daily living. In this episode, Joshua shares how his love of home and years of listening to clients as a real estate professional triggered his creative passion and prompted his career in interior design. Joshua is also a certified life coach, and he shares with us the power of mindset and the role that it plays in the growth and development of his own design business and how it could do the same for yours. Before we get started, we'd like to acknowledge our sponsors who help keep the information and inspiration coming week after week. This podcast episode is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen featuring the industry's top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. I'm especially excited to announce the opening of their newest showroom in Mission Viejo and the upcoming grand opening of their showroom in the Laguna Design Center. As a trade professional, you're eligible for their exclusive rewards program, Perch Premier, where you'll earn credits for every purchase of appliances, plumbing, hardware, and outdoor kitchens. This program is loaded with perks and benefits, so sign up today and tell them you heard about Perch Premier on Design Biz Survival Guide. This podcast episode is also sponsored by Sunset West, the design trade's premier resource for outdoor furnishings. Founded upon a family legacy of fine furnishings and a culture of excellence, the California-based company is dedicated to providing premium, casual furnishings and personalized service to the design trade. Come experience the quality and comfort of Sunset West at Las Vegas Summer Market, July 24th through the 28th. And be sure to join us for our Welcome to Market Happy Hour on Monday, July 25th from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Building B, Suite 162. If you're a fan of the podcast, you're invited. See you there. And now, our conversation with Joshua Smith. Well, Josh, welcome to the podcast. It is so great to have you.
Thank you. I am super excited for this conversation.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. So are you ready to talk business of design?
Let's dive in.
Cool. Before we get too deep in the weeds, I'd like to start by having you share a little bit about yourself with the listener. So just tell us a little bit about you, Josh.
Oh, goodness. Where should we start? I guess just to give you a brief background, you know, I'm a native Texan, born and raised in a small country town outside of Houston, Texas, and made my way to New York City to pursue interior design in my early 30s. Fast forward, been in business almost 10 years now for myself. And I split my time between Houston and Vermont, kind of working all up the East Coast as well as California. Married for 3 years now and have two amazing dogs, Crosby and Mabel, boxers. And we're just feeling really, really blessed to have navigated these crazy times.
No kidding. Light at the end of the tunnel, my friend. We did it.
I know it.
Oh my gosh. So listen, I had the pleasure of meeting you in High Point, and we were able to chat a little bit, and just a little bit of information that we shared, just the conversation that we had because we were in mixed company. I knew that you would be great for the podcast just because you have such a great attitude and such a great outlook, and I'm curious to hear how that contributes to your business. So
tell me first a little bit about your business model. Like, what is your sweet spot? What's your average project look like? How big is your team? That kind of thing.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that. It definitely was, it felt like meeting kindred spirits when we were at that event, and knew that I was excited to continue the conversation.
Yeah.
I guess just to tell you, you know, I mean, gosh, I think like so many people, having been in business a little while now, the model is constantly changing because technology is changing, people are changing, world circumstances continue to change. And so I feel like there has to be, and I've had to be, had some agility in terms of how I do my business and how I operate my business. And, you know, I started off in New York City, and business was primarily located there in the Hamptons. Mm-hmm. Had a couple of wonderful young ladies working with me at the time, which was amazing. And then, you know, kind of like COVID hit, and I fell in love, and I got married, and I moved, and it came back. And there's a whole other podcast in there. But ultimately, had a little bit of burnout as well, and had to really sort of look at that and make this sort of like reclamation that like, no, this is something I'm truly passionate about. This is something that I'm supposed to give as my gift, as my offering. But my mindset has to be in proper proportion in order to be able to do that. And so it was very interesting. Once I recommitted to design into my business, very quickly I started to attract and bring in the types of clients that I wanted, the type of projects that I wanted. It's just very interesting how that all happens, that our, you know, our thoughts create our actions, and our actions create our experiences, and our experiences create our destiny. So that being said, now fast forward to where I am today. Like I said, I am kind of like based on the East Coast, but also do a lot in Palm Springs. I had a place there for a little while. We've got some amazing projects there, new construction. One's a gut renovation of a famous writer's house, Harold Robbins. He wrote lots of novels that were turned into movies back in the 50s and 60s. So some magical stuff happening out there. And then, you know, something in the Hamptons. I've got something in Litchfield County. I'm doing a big house, modern farmhouse in Rye, New York. And then I got some stuff here in Vermont. And then also, I'm forgetting one. Oh, yeah, New York City. Hello.
Of course.
I'm doing a cool penthouse there on the Upper West Side. So we're kind of all over the place. And I think what makes my model interesting today is I'm probably one of the few people that has a remote hybrid type of work environment. Everyone does not report into the office because we're all spread out in different places, but we do come together quarterly for offsites to really evaluate kind of, you know, how are things working? What can we do better? Where can we improve? But for the most part, we're all virtual now since the pandemic.
Very interesting. I'm glad that you said that, because I think that a lot of design professionals are still exploring what type of format is going to work for them, you know, post-COVID, because we learned a lot about ourselves and our business during COVID. Which brings me to something that you said at the beginning of your statement, that, you know, you kind of were focusing on mindset and getting yourself in the right place, experiencing a little bit of burnout. So obviously you use that time to really look inward. And I talk about that all the time as well. There's something about that, you know, 2020, 2021, where a lot of people were really evaluating their business model, the fatigue that they didn't know was setting in. And so clearly you were able to readjust and get yourself in a place to where when things picked up, you're hitting the ground running, because you're spread all over the place. And I'm getting burned out just listening to where all of your projects are, but clearly you're in a new place in your mind and in your heart to where you can embrace that amount of work. And it sounds like you're killing it.
Thank you. Well, you know, it's a lot of things, exciting things are happening, and I do feel very fortunate in that regard. But what I will tell you is that it has and does, when you get the right mindset, it will pick up. You will bring in those clients. You will have those amazing projects. Those other opportunities will come in. And then you get really busy. And like with every business owner, it's like, one, that's when you stop prospecting, right? Because you're so busy working the projects that then when those are done, you're like, oh, well, now it's quiet. That's the one biggest thing I always hear. Or number two is you're so busy and you're wanting to say yes to everything that you end up burning out. And so I know the key for me is that I used to think like self-care and personal wellness, you know, was kind of would take away from my productivity. But now what I realized is like, it's imperative that I take care of me and my body, mind, spirit in order to be the most effective that I can be for my clients, for my team, and in order to kind of burn the candle at both ends when needed. Right. But also make sure that sometimes it's okay to say no.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was just listening to a podcast this morning and, who was it? And she said that no is a complete sentence. She's like, no is a complete sentence. You need to
Sounds
remember
like
that.
Yeah,
it was Gail and Davis, actually.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's a hard one because we feel like we have to justify or explain the reason that we can or won't or whatever. Yeah. And really it's just like, no. And I heard something the other day about no was like, no is the gateway to freedom.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I'm glad that you are in a place of self-care, and it's something actually that I neglected for a long time. Cause I too thought like, no, you just got to hustle. And you know, there's time for the rest later. And you know, I learned the hard way, and now, you know, self-care it's front and center for me.
Absolutely.
Like I've got to go to the gym every morning. I don't take appointments before 10 a.m. I get a massage every 2 weeks without fail. Without those things, I can't be my best self. And without being my best self, I can't be of best service to my clients.
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's like, you know, now more than ever, we've got so much noise and input of things coming in. So we're constantly just like intake. And then as designers, we're always on and there's this output. But the question is like, what am I doing that is actually energizing me versus depleting me? And a lot of times those, you know, noise and the news cycles and the things that we've got to pay attention to and be a part of, but at the same time, it's an, and we have to also, you know, be sparkly and be there to guide our clients through these very stressful situations. And so like, how do I, and that's the question, is everyone has to ask that for themselves. It's like, what do I need? What energizes me as opposed to what depletes me? And sometimes it's literally making a list of those two and getting clear. And when I feel depleted, it's like, okay, I don't even have to think about what to do. I can just look at my list and say, oh yes, you know, taking a walk with the dogs in the field and just being really present with no phone. Yep. That charges me up, you know?
Very simple.
Very simple. It always is.
Isn't it funny? I think we overcomplicate it as usual. We're usually in our own way.
Of course. Yeah. It has to be something dramatic. Like, oh, I've got to go to, you know, the spa in order to, you know, decompress. And it's like, you can, and I have, but it's not always a requirement to charge your batteries.
Yeah, for sure. So Josh, let's go back a little bit. Tell me about your journey of design, kind of your path. Like, did you go to design school? Did you always know that you were going to be a designer? Is this a second career for you like it is for many? What's your story in that regard?
Yeah, so I was not one of those who always knew that I wanted to be an interior designer. I always felt that I was creative, although I wasn't very artistic. I was not good at sketching. I was not good at painting. And so, you know, I kind of just was like, oh, I'm not a creative person. And not really realizing there's many other ways to be creative and express creativity. But I was great in school. And ultimately, though, I ended up selling real estate. What I did get from childhood, though, was this love of home, this love of season, this love of holiday, this love of togetherness. My mom and my dad did a great job in kind of teaching us the importance of home and making, you know, the mundane more meaningful in daily living. And then, you know, because of my love of home, I ended up getting into real estate in my early 20s, sold real estate for about 8 years in Houston, Texas. Of course, during that time, I got to see so many homes, how people lived. Some of it was like, you know, amazing and inspiring. The other was like, wow, how are these people really doing it? You know, but what I also got to see during that time was I got to listen to my clients and listen to what they were responding to, what resonated with them, what did they like, what did they not like. And then after a few years in design, I found myself kind of helping my clients after they had purchased something with renovations or selecting tile or, hey, Josh, what do you think about a paint color? And then it wasn't really until I did my first home, it was a gut renovation and I knew nothing about it at the time, but I started getting magazines and started reading books. And somewhere within those first couple of weeks, my heart just started beating faster. And it felt like my heart was starting to sing. And I had recently read, at the time, Return to Love by Marianne Williamson. And she talks about, you know, really listen to what makes your heart sing. And that's an indication of what you're supposed to be doing, what your contribution is supposed to be in the world. And so I loved that process. I started to really understand the power of a home, especially when it was designed to nurture me and kind of foster me in a certain way that, like, when I walked through the front door, I would have this experience of, yeah. And like, that is to me the power of a home. And that's kind of what I go for with all of my clients is like, how are we going to create that experience for you every time you walk in the front door? Right. And so that being said, being the typical Gemini kind of personality that I am, I decided very quickly, this is what I'm supposed to do. I sold everything I owned. I moved to New York City. I went to school, to the New York School of Interior Design. I did a certificate program there and then was fortunate enough to get an internship that summer with Stephen Gambrell, which was one of my favorites. There was a serendipitous way that came about, but again, there are no coincidences. So worked their internship for the summer. And then at the end of the summer, I was going to go back to school. Right. And I thought, you know what, I would be remiss if I didn't send an email to the office manager just to say, if anything ever became available, I would totally love the opportunity to interview. So I sent that on a Friday, and on Sunday I got a response back from her. And she's like, well, wow. One of the project coordinators just gave their notice on Friday. We would love for you to take the position.
Oh my gosh.
And so I ended up being with Stephen for about 18 months, which was just the kind of, you know, the ultimate in terms of getting to do amazing design.
Wow. What a great experience. It's a good story. I like that.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah.
So did you end up going back to design school?
I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't. I did not. I do not have a design degree. I do have my design certificate, but you know, it was one of those tough choices where it was like, okay, I can continue with school and continue to go into lots of debt. Right. Or I could just immerse myself in this experience that's been presented to me. And again, I was already in my 30s. And so I just thought, you know what, let me just dive into this career here and see what happens. And
the way I see it, you got a degree in design from Steve Gambrell. That's the way I see it.
Oh, see, look at that positive spin. I love it. Well, and you know what, I would have to say that you can learn concepts in design school, right?
Right.
But you also have to bring, I think, some natural gifts and abilities to it. But what is probably my biggest takeaway and what was not kind of necessarily or can't be taught really in college and in most businesses is the actual execution, right? 100%. We can talk theoretically all day long about these things and we can spend a lot of time being creative and doing amazing drawings and all of that. But if you don't know how to execute in this business, you will never make it. It's like 10% is creativity and 90% is execution. And so much of what I learned from doing these, you know, 10,000 square foot homes in different cities was like really taking a project from conception to completion. And there was like not an option to not crush it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's
exactly.
Like, I've got to just immerse myself in that and learn from some of the best and be surrounded by a great team. And I think that is probably one of the biggest gifts that I was given was really learning how to take something from conception to completion and having the client be super thrilled with the end result.
Right. Probably the best thing you did for your career, because learning under somebody else's wing like that, you really do. You could have gone back to school for 5 more years, but at the end of the day, you still need that experience. And I always encourage everyone, please, please, please go work for another designer before you launch your own business. Just call it research and development, call it what you will, but the best way to learn how the business of design runs and works is from the inside out. And so make that part of your education and exploration path and go and work for someone else. Because to your point, what they don't teach you in school, everything is best case scenario. And in real life, you learn how to problem solve to achieve that execution that you were describing. And you learn how to put out fires and you learn how to correct mistakes and deal with missing deadlines. Because all that is the reality of design, just like it is the reality of business. And the best place to see that firsthand is in the trenches.
We're taking a quick break to recognize another one of our partners who helps keep the information and inspiration coming week after week. This podcast episode is sponsored by Design Manager, the design trade's most reliable project management, purchasing, and accounting platform. The business of design is complex and requires solutions developed specifically for our industry. Design Manager has invested decades responding to the needs of interior design professionals and continues to deliver innovative tools to manage your design business with efficiency and profitability in mind. Visit designmanager.com to start a free 30-day trial of the tool trusted by top interior design firms across the country.
You know, it's oftentimes, it's kind of like, even when I, after being at Stevens and kind of going off on my own, very quickly realizing like, oh God, like I don't know what I don't know about running a business and nobody's ever taught me how to actually run a business. I feel confident that I can design now, but oh my gosh, now I've got to run a business too. Right. And that was another big learning curve for me. And then I had to make a decision very early on that it was like, okay, since I don't know what I don't know about running a business, I better ask somebody who does. And so I got a business coach right away, probably within my first 3 months of starting my own business.
That was your first hire as a business coach. So smart.
That was my first hire. Absolutely. And thank God I did, because there are so many things that can be set up wrong. And it's so much about setting up proper systems. You know, we love what we do, but we need to be profitable, right?
100%.
We're not just doing this just to get by. And we're not doing it to make ourselves crazy. And very quickly, had I not been given some of the guidance and direction and the advice that I had, this could have gone a completely different direction, right. I believe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always tell people when they ask, you know, who's the first person that I should hire, I always try to talk them out of hiring a designer and into hiring an admin person or a purchasing person, a full-time bookkeeper, or some sort of business coach or consultant that can really kind of guide them through those core things in your business that are important. And then once you learn and understand those, you can delegate those accordingly. But yeah, to go forward and then play catch up in this business is crazy, because I mean, it's a crazy business, period.
Yeah. And I was fortunate that it's kind of like, I had a lot of opportunity right at one time. And so, you know, I find that often creatives, we're a little bit more afraid of the numbers when it, anyway, you know what
sure.
I mean? It's like,
naturally.
I'm like, oh, I don't really want to do that part. Or, oh, I don't want to ask the client for money. Or, oh, I don't want to send out the billing. Like that's just not an area that in the beginning I felt very comfortable in for numerous reasons. I mean, we all come with past beliefs and inherited beliefs from society, from family, whatever, around money in general. So money conversations were always hard, but even just like looking at that or knowing how to look at that. But it was my business coach who very quickly was like, here's the deal. Like, if this is your hourly rate and this is what you're charging, and yet you hire an admin assistant at this rate and you're able to bill your hourly rate for that, you're actually making this much profit on that admin's time, which is going to help you increase your bottom line. And I'm like, what? It just never occurred to me.
I get to charge for that?
I'm like, wait, I'm going to make money off their time? And it was like, yeah, let's look at the business model, and let's look at the 1-year plan, the 3-year plan, the 5-year plan, and how this really could and would work if it's set up properly. And I was just kind of blown away by all that. But I hired Ashley, who was just, she was a godsend. When I hired her, I'm like, okay, I probably only can commit to 20 hours a week. That's probably it. That's all I can do. But would you ever be interested in going to full time? Should we ever get there? And she's like, yeah, I'd be open to it. And literally it was 2 weeks later, she was full time. And she was with me for about 6 years until she finally, after the second little one, she was like, okay, I'm going to have to be a full time mom now. But yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Now, God, you got such great advice from your business coach. And I hope that everyone's listening very closely, because I just think getting that information from whatever source is so valuable to your business. But going back to your conversation about money and that kind of uncomfortable feeling that we all get, you know, even when I ran my own design business and then when I was running someone else's business, the most uncomfortable part of doing that was, you know, having those conversations about money and finances, either internally and or with clients. But at the beginning of our conversation, we talked about mindset. And what are some things that you've done to help get you to a place where you can have those conversations more comfortably? I bet everyone's wondering this. And so does it come easier for you now? And how did you get there?
Sure, sure. That's a great question. And I think it is one that's tough for everybody in general, because it comes to this like fundamental core belief about worth and self-worth, mm-hmm. which we all have our own stories and things that we grow up for whatever reason, due to circumstances, feeling a little bit of unworthiness, right? And as we get older, we start to unravel that and unpack that and kind of get clear on that. But there's still that programming that's in there somewhere. So it was really important for me to do some self-work, right? To really look at like, what are my limiting beliefs that I have around money? What are the limiting beliefs that I have around my time, my worth? Mm. And then what is the fear behind communicating it, right? And getting clear about what that was. And fast forward, you know, from doing that work with a coach or with in certain like mastermind type groups or whatever I would do, really started to see that like, it's about empowerment. It's about confidence. And one of the best pieces of advice that I got is because I was charging very little for my time in the beginning, mm-hmm. because I felt like I was new and I didn't have a lot of experience. And the coach I was working with at the time said, okay, well, you may not bring the same experience that someone else that's been doing it longer, but what level of service are you bringing?
Right.
And I was like, oh, I said, well, I bring superior service. I know that I show up and I handhold my clients and they're going to get all of me from conception to completion. He's like, that's worth something more than what you're giving yourself credit for. And so really looking, and so that I had to understand my worth in order for me to be able to communicate that. And I think that's the next phase of it. Is being able to, I mean, in this business, it's all about setting expectations with clients from day one, mm-hmm. but also having those money conversations and say, let me tell you how this works, you know, and just keep it very casual, very light in the beginning. I always kind of do the thing too, that's like, okay, you know, you're going to be writing lots of checks and things are going to be going to receiving warehouses and things are under construction. And I'll be asking for some more money. And, you know, then you're going to start to feel like, God, I've written all these checks. I have nothing to show for it. You're going to get frustrated. And then, you know, finally fast forward, install, you move in, you have that, you're so excited. Yay, we made it. That's what's going to happen. That's the process that we're going to go through. So I'm going to use that as a reference point throughout the whole process and let you know that we're in that phase. And so when I get to those places where I can sense that clients might be feeling a little bit whatever, I'm like, remember when I told you how this works and we were going to be in that phase where you were going to feel like there was a lot of money going out and nothing to show for it? Just know that that's where we are. So it makes total sense that you feel that way. Yeah. But we're going to get to the other side very soon. So just hang in there with me and we're going to get there. And so I think just learning how to have those kind of conversations and setting expectations around that really helps clients trust you more.
Oh, yeah.
It reinforces their confidence in you as a business owner.
Because I think that's really what it boils down to, is trust. And by not having those conversations, you make them wonder, like, does Josh really know what he's doing? What's going on? Where are we in this? Why isn't someone telling me what stage we're in? I know he told me at the beginning that we might be in a place like this, but why isn't he reassuring me that we're in that place and everything's going to be fine and, you know, the finish line is in sight? They are asking themselves those questions. So if Absolutely. You don't read them like it sounds like you do and respond to that, it puts them in a place of, you know, discomfort.
Yeah. And I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, business has changed, as you know, with supply chain issues, you know, there's labor shortages, there's all sorts of things that have impacted the availability of goods for our clients, which of course impacts timelines, which impacts, of course, our installations, which also means we have to have extra help in procurement and expediting to make sure and double checking things haven't been pushed back. And that's a whole nother thing. So, you know, what we've started also doing is, well, at first what we were seeing is we would go in on the back end of something and see that like, okay, if we're going to propose this side table and it says there's 30 of them available. Okay, we better hurry. So we create the proposal, we send it to the client. The client is like, yep, we'll do it. Then they're going to send a check or
Right.
Wire the money or whatever the normal process. Right. Yeah.
The usual process.
Takes days to do. And then we would go in to log in to order that item and all 30 of them were gone. And so we said, we're going to have to do this differently. And so what I told clients is I kind of used that as an example and said, here's the deal. We're going to have to start working with retainers. And when I send you a proposal for something and you like it, you need to reply back immediately. Yes, go for it. So that we can order it right that day, because if not, we may miss out on that piece that you're really excited about and that we were really excited about. Since we've been doing that, it's sped up our process. It's made us more efficient. We're not missing out on the items that we spend so much time searching for. So that's just one example of how, you know, just again, communicating why we're going to do it this way and why this is advantageous and beneficial to everyone. Clients are like, great, let's do it. No problem. Yeah,
because now you're able to purchase that item in 5 minutes instead of 5 days, and everybody wins. But to your point, you know, you've got to explain to the client, this is our strategy. This is why we're doing it. So I'm not just asking you for a $50,000 retainer just to hang on to. Like, trust me, there's a strategy here and I'm going to explain it to you. And I think that's the key. You know, communicating that is the key for asking for $50,000 or $100,000 or whatever it is that you need to get the job, to make the job run more efficiently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I feel like this is just going to be the new way that we do it. And now when I go to have new client projects, I'm like, this is how we work, because we found now that that is the most efficient way to do it, as opposed to here's a batch of 20 proposals, you review them, you know, and then you miss out on so much stuff. So this is just so much more of a streamlined and efficient way to do it.
You are my people, Josh, because you are all about communication. And I love that so much. I really believe that that is key in getting through this business. And I learned that the hard way. I learned it by under communicating. And now in my own business, sometimes I may even over communicate, just in the interest of having everything out there so that everything can run smoothly. And those expectations that you were talking about are set and understood and everyone's on the same page. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, because when we spoke in our pre-interview conversation, you told me the story about communication, not so much with the clients, but with their kids as part of your information gathering process, which I thought was brilliant and I've never heard before. Can you share that story with our listeners? I think it'll be something cool that I think a lot of them will want to adapt.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I'm glad you brought that up, because it actually has not only been super impactful and meaningful to my clients, but this actually has been impactful and meaningful to me. Yeah. But it's actually really engaging the kids in the project when it comes to their rooms, especially. And so what I started doing during Zoom, I had the idea, I was like, you know what, this could be really fun if we let the kids come on and I take my clients through a series of questions. I'm like, why don't I take these kids through some questions? And then also, this is an opportunity for me, and I even let the parent know that, like, this is an opportunity for them to take some real ownership and pride in their space, and setting up their space for success, and me kind of educating them on that. And in doing so, they're more likely to be engaged to take care of their things or to keep their room clean, because there's a sense of pride and ownership. So I started doing Zoom meetings, like 20 to 30 minute Zoom meetings with my clients, kind of getting, you know, favorite colors, what's your patterns, you know, what are your interests, what are you doing in school? They love it. Some make Pinterest boards. Then I kind of show them a little mood board to make sure I've captured the essence of what they want in their room. Yeah. And it's just so fun to sort of, you know, teach these kids about design, but then also to see how they get so excited about this opportunity as well. So I think it's just been a real win-win. So we've started doing that with all of our clients, all the kids, and it's great.
I love that. I don't think they'll know as kids the impact that that is having on them until many, many years later. But just to have that experience and to work with you and feel like your opinion is of value. And then to also see the process and understand, hey, this is not just, I'm not going to just wake up one day and my room's going to be done. Someone's working on this. There's a process that's going into this. And now I know about it. I'm not saying that every kid's probably into it, but I think it's a really good lesson on so many levels that they probably won't realize until much later in life. But I think it's really cool that you do that.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's been a nice value add.
Right. Right. And I bet the clients respond to it as well. Like, wow, this guy, Josh, he's good.
they really have appreciated it a lot, because it does give them also this framework and context. And so especially like, you know, 10 to 13, 14 year olds, it's like the parents are like, oh, I'm trying to just figure out how to keep us all as a nucleus and hanging out together. And so when now we've like brought them into this design process, it's something that they get to be a part of and do as a family, which, you know, kind of keeps them less on their phones, at least in some of the meetings, or gives them stuff to talk about and do together, which I think everybody is, especially parents, crave more of that with their kids these days.
For sure. For sure. And right now in our industry, I mean, the client experience is such a big conversation. I'm actually working on a big presentation for my retreat in October about the client experience. And I think that that's one really amazing example of how you can, you know, really elevate that client experience and leave a lasting impression. That's an example of something that they're going to remember at the end of this project. That's a story that they're going to tell to people that they refer to you. Very effective tool. Love it.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Well, Josh, we've got some signature questions here at the podcast. Are you ready?
Okay, let's do it.
The first one being, what is your secret to survival? So what would you say is your secret to survival in the business of design?
I would say the secret to survival is, I'm going to bring it back to mindset.
Yeah.
Because believe me, when I talk about mindset, it's something I'm passionate about. I'm a certified meditation teacher and certified life coach. And so I love all of that stuff. But there's a myth out there that people that love that stuff or have trained in that stuff do it perfectly. Well, let me just let you know that we don't. But what's important is what I call the comeback ratio, right? Mm-hmm. So there's been installs, or there's been times where there's been a delay or a contract or whatever. Like we had an install last December where pillows, $5,000 worth of pillows went missing from FedEx because they got shipped and nobody could find this 70-pound box of pillows. And it somehow slipped through the cracks with our receiver. They had told us it was there, but it wasn't. Anyway, and I, you know, wanted to automatically go into that mindset that I had before I took my break, which was like, God, this always happens in design. Nothing ever works out. You know, try so hard. And you get to the end. And I'm like, okay, hold on a second here. What is actually true? Like, we're not curing cancer here. This is just pillows. I have a great relationship with my workroom. Let me call and see what we can do. Luckily, all the fabrics happened to still be available. They turned them around in a week and a half. Wow. They were a week late. Everybody was fine. And it ended up being a beautiful experience. So that's kind of like the comeback ratio I'm talking about. It's like when we can cultivate ourselves enough to step back and not get caught up into the craziness of just what is this business many times.
Right.
And my client, this same client, has just given me probably the mantra that I also now tell clients in the beginning is, you know what I realized through this process of working with you? And I was like, what was that? He said that you're responsible for everything, but you have control over nothing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, you just summed that up into one sentence for me.
I always say on these interviews that we should make a t-shirt out of that. Like almost everyone that I talk to says something like that. And I'm like, that's a t-shirt. We need to make a t-shirt.
It totally is. And it's like, it's just important to remind ourselves because we can take it so personal. And I think that's probably the biggest difference between when I was starting out as opposed to now is I'm like, oh my God, they're going to think I'm a terrible designer because I didn't know these people, you know, and you just kind of work yourself up into this anxious place and this overwhelm. But when you can learn just to kind of step back, take a deep breath. Okay. What's the truth here? What's really going on? And what do I have control over? And right. And again, it's the communication. And if you're able to step back enough to create that space between you and the fire of the day, then you're much more likely to keep. I mean, look, we're doing this all because we want to have fun. We want to enjoy it. We love working with the clients. We love design. I love working with my team. And so if I let all of these fires kind of like burn the house down, so to speak, what's the point? You know,
and it's such a waste of time. It's such a waste of time and energy because I was a hanger oner. I used to hang on to things and it would just stew with me until I realized all the energy that I'm investing in being pissed about this, I could be redirecting into solving this and moving on. And trust me, again, Lesson learned. Yeah, I wish I would have known you 10 years ago, Josh.
I know. Well, I feel like we're all learning and growing. And what's amazing is, I'll just say this too, and I know you do such an amazing job at this, and I love that this is a passion that you've channeled into, is like creating a sense of community within the space, mm-hmm. as a designer. Because as a business owner, who are you going to take your stuff to?
Yeah.
You're at the top of the list. And so there's a lot of stuff that we have to process and think about and explore, and decisions to be made operationally, but creatively. And so really making sure that you are that what has been helpful for me, I guess I should keep it on me, is like making sure that I stay plugged into other designers and have those conversations, to work with coaches, to go to retreats and seminars and connect and find out how other people are doing things. Because one, you don't feel so alone in it. And two, you get some really good ideas and perspective, as opposed to if you were just trying to figure it out on your own out there. And so since I've been more engaged in the design community and with other people and having these conversations and not being afraid to share some weaknesses, perceived weaknesses or failures, I've gotten some amazing guidance and opinions, which is shape-shifting my business even in real time today.
Oh, completely. And our community are people who get us. I mean, they're people that can actually relate to us. They're running the same kind of business. And yeah, it is fun. That's amazing. That's amazing. What would you say is the one thing you know now that you wish you knew then when you started your business?
Oh my gosh. You know what? I think really, I'll put it this way, because I didn't get it at the time, but my very first day at the New York School of Interior Design, I had an amazing teacher for historical concepts. And she said, here's the deal. We're going to go back through the beginning of time with all of this furniture and art. And you may not think everything that we look at is beautiful personally, but can you appreciate it for what it is? And so I remember that phrase, right? But then, of course, I launched my own business, and we're in that world of compare and despair, and you see somebody else's project, and it's like, oh my God, they're so amazing, they're so talented, oh, I wish I was that. You know, and you can get fall into that space of comparing your stuff, or gosh, I've been in business as long as they have, and they're getting, you know, the super big client or the big amazing project. I haven't gotten mine yet. Does that mean I'm not good? And so there was this real thing about me of not really, I guess, going back to knowing my worth, but it was confidence is what it was, right? And knowing that your people are out there, and knowing that there are people that are going to relate to the design that you do, that are going to love it. They're going to love how you do it. And your job is just to be available and accessible and receptive to having those people be able to find you. And all that takes care of itself. When we just get out of our mind.
Yeah. Your people are out there. They're out there.
They are. And there's enough for everybody. I mean, it's just like, it's having that abundant mentality is so important. There's no need for any sort of scarcity mentality, because there are so many people out there who want guidance and direction from someone that they can trust and that they know is going to do and be reliable to see them through.
I agree. How would you say that you pay it forward in the design community? How do you give back? And by the way, you're doing it right now.
Thank you. You know, that's a great question. And I think it's one that I've been asking myself a lot lately. Mm-hmm. And in the design community and in other communities. But I think, you know, one is I've mentored and talked, and I don't know how many conversations I've had with aspiring designers or people that have been in the industry or other designers who will call me and say, hey, I've really seen your trajectory, or I've seen how you took a pause, or you've incorporated this, like, how have you done it? And I always make sure I take the time, no matter how busy I am, to share experiences and advice with other designers. Like, you know, I love when people reach out and ask questions on Instagram or you know, I've done some coaching myself, and I love getting in the weeds with people and helping them figure out where they might step into the grandest version of who they're here to be. And so I think a lot of it's come through that way.
It's funny. I say all the time, both jokingly and in all seriousness, there's us and there's them. So I consider our design community people that are willing to answer the questions and take the time. And I'm excited to see that community expand very fast, because, you know, I come from a time when people did not share information. When I started my business of design, people were not sharing information. They weren't answering questions. They certainly weren't giving business advice, for sure. And so I'm so excited to see how this community has grown. I adopted the word community over industry, and I use that word community because I think that's really what it's all about. And not everybody is on board, and that's fine. But for those that are, we're in it together. I love it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head. It is a community. And we are all in this together. And we all do have the same mission, which is to bring, you know, more beauty and light and love to the world through the work that we do. And if we can guide each other and help each other and support each other in that journey, and always bring it back to why did we get into this in the first place? Then that's how we get to stay in the magic of it all. And so, but we need other people to help us remember that that's why we're doing this, right? And so that's why I love that you're building community, and establishing community, because I think it just makes it that much more meaningful and magical.
Well, Josh, I am so glad that you are a part of this community, and I'm so glad that you're willing to have this conversation with me and that we can share it with all the listeners. I mean, this is why I do this. This is such a good example of the type of conversations that I've had for years with other design professionals. And when I decided to start the podcast, the whole intention was to continue to have these conversations, and not only I benefit from them, but everyone listening. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. How can the listeners learn more about you? Where can we find you online and on social media?
Sure. So you can find me at joshuasmithinc.com. And my handle on Instagram is at joshuasmithinc. And so feel free to reach out, say hello. I would love to connect with you guys. And thank you so much for asking me to be on today. I'm so excited about all that you're doing, all that you're putting together. I just think it's an invaluable commitment, and really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, Josh. Have a good one.
All right, you too.
Hey, everyone. Before we dive into our episode recap, I wanted to remind you that registration for our third annual Design Biz Retreat is now open. If you're looking for an immersive learning and networking experience that will help you take your design business to the next level, then join me, our incredible guest speakers, and 24 fellow design professionals this fall, October 20th through the 21st, for what past attendees are calling a transformative and empowering 2 days of information and motivation. Visit our website and select the DBR 2022 tab for all the details. Now let's talk about our conversation with Joshua Smith. I mean, really, this episode was filled with so many inspiring nuggets and aha moments. Probably should have warned you guys to grab a pad and pen before hitting play. I love Josh's journey from real estate to design, and how his love of home guided and inspired him along the way. I appreciate that Josh shared how his design education and time at Stephen Gambrell prepared him for the development and execution of design, and how he relied on a coach to prepare him for the business of design. Everyone's path is different, but one thing remains true. We're all better when we surround ourselves with people who know more than we do. Whether it's continued education or mindset and motivation, never stop learning. Speaking of mindset, this little gem stuck with me for hours after my conversation with Josh. Our thoughts create our actions create experiences, and our experiences create our destiny. I mean, think about it. All things, good and bad, truly stem from our mindset. When Josh talked about self-care and how it acts as a sort of physical and mental conditioning to prepare you for challenges and obstacles, well, I've never heard that described better. Things go wrong in business and life. It's inevitable. You have to be in the best state of mind and body to conquer and overcome these things, and that requires self-care and maintenance. So hit the gym, commit to that yoga class, and don't let anyone tell you that a massage is overindulgent. Thank you, Josh, for all of your words of wisdom and encouragement. And thank you all for joining us for another inspiring conversation. Until next time, be safe, be kind, and get out there and inspire.